folks. Welcome back to the Flexion.com T-Talk podcast. This episode is brought to you by TaylorMade and the all-new Tour Response Golf Ball. Sitting in the studio for my last episode for a quick break for vacation with my co-host Scott McCloud. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. Just off the golf course, so can never complain about that.
Well, I'm going to switch because I'm going to complain about it. I'm playing bad golf again. I'm going to ask you this. What do you think's worse? The chipping yips or the driver yips? Because I think we've talked about which one I think, and I'm back to having. So what are your thoughts as the coach here?
I think the driver yips are more painful because I think in having the driver yips, you can certainly lose more balls and have more penalty strokes than the chipping yips, where, you know, the chipping yips seem like they're something you can recover from a lot easier.
Yeah,
versus standing over the tee shot and not being able to get your brain to work properly. And I think if you've never suffered from the driver yips, which obviously you have, and I had at one point, it's a painful experience.
It's awful. It's every hole you're like, well, should I just go drop over there because I'm going to lose the ball? I lost 7 golf balls today.
Wow.
I lost some money, which is back-to-back rounds.
Explains your text to me earlier today.
Yeah, it was frustrating. It was extremely frustrating. Came on the way home, you know, had a flat tire. It wasn't the best day, but I'm more annoyed by the golf than the flat tire. Flat tires happen. Golf does not. And I think here's where I want to go is just really quickly is like, my issue is I'm on the range and everything feels good. It's bringing the range to the course. I'm not committing out there. So I want an early tip of the week. How do you commit? Like, what do you tell people to commit to it out there and not worry about the result, but just committing to that actual swing versus, you know, trying to steer the golf ball around, which I think is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, you really have got to delve into the process more than anything as far as, you know, over the result. And that's hard to do. It's something you've got to practice. And that means even practicing that on the driving range of going through and the process of what your pre-shot routine is and what your focus is. And, you know, that's as hard, if not harder, than the physical aspect of the game. So you're right. It's a tough one. It's one a lot of players have to go through, but the better players will tend to get involved with the process and not worry about the results, as you mentioned, and not really care whether it's good or bad. And the more they delve into that, the more they'll realize that it just frees them up.
Well, I got a month away before the Flagstick Open, which is now officially sold out. We've been plugging this for a while. And if you were like, I'll get in on it. No, you won't anymore. You're going to get in on a waiting list at this point. So I got to figure this out. Perfect time to go on a vacation. I think I need to just put the golf clubs away. So I'm looking for that, going on vacation, going to settle in at the cottage, and that is it. But also bad timing because it feels like a majors this week, and it's because the big cat's back in the field at the Memorial Tournament, Jack's Tournament. But, you know, we already saw this golf course. We saw it last week. We saw it for the Workday Charity Open, which ended up being super, super exciting at the end. I didn't catch much golf Thursday to... You know, I didn't catch the first 72 holes, let's say that.
you didn't need to. Well, 71.
Yeah.
72 was really good.
I came in on 72, and I was locked and loaded after that. What an exciting playoff. Just bomb after bomb of putts and just an unfortunate bounce behind a tree for Justin Thomas on the third playoff hole. And Morikawa ends up picking his second PGA Tour win.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive. And I mean putt versus putt. I think everybody that got them fired up. And even if they didn't have a crowd there, I think there's a lot of people jumping off their couch watching that happen and forgetting right away that, you know, it was the Workday Charity Open. Yeah. And they just saw the fact that there was two, you know, stars of the game out there battling head to head and doing something that you would not expect. I mean, 75 feet of putts between the two of them is certainly unlikely. You don't expect it. You don't expect it to happen when it has to happen. But, you know, that's how skilled these players are. And Morikawa, you know, we've talked about him nonstop on this podcast, and certainly he continues to impress. And, you know, I'm really curious now of, you know, what we think his ceiling is going to be. I don't want to be the guy that, you know, is always going, hey, you know, he's the hot guy and, you know, he's going to win everything. But I'm more curious just long term, what's this guy's career look like?
Well, I think a few months back, you know, I'm not tooting our own horns here, but I think both of us had him as the number one of the three coming out, in Hovland, Wolf, and Morikawa, just based on his ball striking, his putt. He's got the full game, and he doesn't miss a cut, so that kind of helps, I guess. And just, he almost didn't get there, though. That putt on 18 really reminded me of, I forget whatever that tournament was a few weeks ago, where Daniel Berger ended up winning, and that awful lip, you could just see it in his body, his pain. It was like, no, not this again. This one stayed in, though.
Yeah, and we talked about that Charles Schwab challenge of that putt that was missed in the playoff or whatever, and we wondered how he was going to respond to that and if it was going to scar him, and obviously it didn't. But there's some shaky short putts there. There's ones that, you know, I even saw a couple earlier in the round that, you know, looped around the hole, and he was talking about it a fair bit or whatever. But you know, he does so many great things with his, especially with his irons, you know, just a great ball striker, fun to watch. And I think he's gained a lot of fans, and, you know, you can't really discount him, and he's there to play every tournament. So, you know, he's obviously in the mix because he's not missing cuts.
No, he's back this week. Bryson's back this week. As I said, the big cat's back this week. I'm going to give you those three as your pick. You got, you know, Tiger, Bryson, or Morikawa. Who are you picking to finish the highest of those three this week?
Ooh, obviously it'd be great to see Tiger play really, really well. But, you know, based on his T68 and his only appearance at the Genesis, you know, he says he's better now as far as his body is concerned. I think he's in better shape that way. Morikawa coming off the win is obviously going to have a lot of confidence. But I think I would have to go with Bryson here on a number of points. One, obviously he won a couple of weeks ago. He won here 2 years ago. He won in 2018. Yes, he might be bringing some different skills, a different approach to the game a little bit.
Size.
Yeah, some things like that. Maybe a few more milkshakes and stuff like that. But I would probably say I'd have to put my money on him out of those three.
Well, out of those three, he does have the best odds at 11-1. With Morikawa at like 7th best at 23-1 and Tiger at 26-1. I think that's an awful bet with Tiger. I think if you're betting on that, the reason it's so low is purely because, you know, when Tiger's in a tournament, people hammer on him, and odds makers need to save themselves some coins in case it does actually come through. I think it would be more surprising for Morikawa to repeat in the top five than it would be for me if he missed the cut this week, just from the amount of pressure that he's going on from last week, just, you know, winning in that playoff, playing those extra holes, being there. You know, he's already won it. You know, he's going to feel more relaxed. Could he miss the cut in a deeper field this week? I don't see how he, you know, I think it's more realistic for some reason in my head than seeing a top five. Am I wrong there?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, winning takes a lot out of you. There's a lot of extra things that you have to do as a winner, whether those are obligations with the media. There's other things that you might be doing with sponsors. It's really hard to focus. There are all those things that you have to do. So for him to turn around, and of course, you know, he's won on this golf course, but it's a different golf course this week. You know, the rough has gotten a little bit juicier. The greens are a little bit faster. They're going to do a few things to, you know, make it more the Memorial, you know, which is one of these elevated events on the tour, than the Workday Charity Open, which is really funny considering obviously it's the same layout, but you know that, you know, Nicklaus and his team have got, you know, a few extra bullets in the quiver here a little bit, or bullets in the gun to really make sure that people maybe just don't take apart Muirfield Village this week.
They haven't cut the rough or even touched the rough since Wednesday of the previous week, so it's going to be a little thicker. But let's talk about Jack real quick. You know, small comment to him. Hey, like, would you shake hands with the winner in this era? You know, and Jack kind of going, you know, I'm shaking anybody's hands, whether they'll shake mine or not. And then all this chatter on Twitter, you know, could the greatest of all time get COVID? And I mean, you can go back to one of our previous podcasts. We kind of brushed over it at the time because we just didn't know what to think with Gary Player. But, you know, it's starting to get some rumblings on Twitter from what Gary said on our podcast that about Jack having it. No one in Jack's camp saying it. Jack's not saying anything. You know, none of the players are going to come out, you know, and say something from about Jack and if they've heard anything, because nobody says anything bad about Jack. But here we are, and it sounds like we may have stirred up a few things here, Scott.
Yeah, it seems that way. I got a few people talking last night. I did talk to a couple other journalists about it. Again, we didn't want to sensationalize it, but you know, it was Gary Player saying it, saying the fact that Jack Nicklaus, and he said that Jack Nicklaus and Barbara Nicklaus, you know, had COVID-19 and had recovered from it after suffering for a long while, which if you go back to episode 65, I believe it was, and you go to the 27:30 mark on it, and you can hear him say that specifically. And, you know, some people were actually kind of reaching out, other journalists, and I know one journalist reached out to his camp and his representative, who said at that time he wouldn't comment on it. So whether he does comment on it this week or not, I don't know. But, you know, it's something to take into account. They say they were ready to have spectators and fans there, that it wasn't everybody else's, you know, decisions. It was the player's decision, and they were prepared to do it. And the government had, you know, paved the way for them to do it. But
paved the way is one way to talk yeah. about what the government's done there, but yeah. continue.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I know where his allegiance lies on a political side of things, and I'm not going to really kind of get into that, but it is kind of interesting the fact that, you know, he's talking about this, but, you know, there's no admission one way or the other of whether he actually had it or not.
No, you just got to go with Gary's word for now, and yeah, well, to any new fans listening, you came here on a weird note, but we hope you enjoy our podcast from here on out, because we're the best one in the industry. A little biased, maybe. But you did mention the kind of fan-free. They have committed now to being fan-free all the way to the Tour Championship. And this, I'm gonna give the PGA Tour credit, because I think they deserve it here. Like, this is proactive. This is smart. Let's do the right thing. But they're still doing a lot of really, really dumb things. And I went on a little bit of a Twitter rampage about the fact that there are players that are testing positive still out there on the PGA yeah. Tour playing, right? And they're like, oh, well, we'll just pair them with other people that have tested positive. Yeah. It's like, that's cool. But guess what? Their caddies might not. The other person's caddy might not. The person they're standing beside on the range might not have it. Like, what are they thinking? Like, I love Dylan Fratelli. Great guy. Awesome guy. Met him before. Super nice guy. Down to earth. You know, you can follow him on Instagram and you'll be like, this is he's a dude. Same with, the first guy, Nick Watney. Nick Watney. Yeah. Same thing. Everyone, yeah. No one says a bad thing about Nick Watney. But the two of these guys, three of these guys, they need to give their head a shake. That is, it's just so selfish to be out there when you are still testing positive. And I know for a couple of them, we're 3 weeks in, and you know, maybe there's another reason, but it just seems baffling that the PGA Tour is putting the risk of players like Tiger Woods, who if mm-hmm. he got it would be horrible for the tour, putting risk on these big names to also get it just for the fact of keeping them. I just can't see why this is happening.
Yeah, and it was interesting even today, Jay Monahan was speaking to the media, and you know, everybody's always going to, you know, basically congratulate themselves. And they were talking about the fact they've done 6,000 tests so far. They've had 21 positives. You know, among them are six caddies on the Korn Ferry Tour that are among that. But, you know, the whole point, and he did say it, you know, obviously they don't want anybody, but if that's the case, they have to be a little bit more proactive as far as what we see going on out there. I mean, you see some players that are obviously using masks out there. You saw Ricky when he got done, you know, on the weekend, and he had his mask on there right away. Other situations that you see it happening, but there's certainly some careless stuff that's still happening out there. And I think the biggest thing here is whether they have it or not, anybody that's in the spotlight has a responsibility to really set an example for other people. And I think that's what's really important is that, you know, and we talk about it here, and, you know, we may not have the biggest audience in the world, but we're trying to make sure that, you know, we're setting a positive tone here, that it's safety first. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And for the tour to maybe risk assets, and you know, players are assets, especially as we talk about somebody like Tiger Woods. If all of a sudden Tiger Woods is not there, and he doesn't feel safe. I mean, it was hard enough for him to get out there this week as it was. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been staying at home and doing his thing. But, you know, the more that you risk that, the more you're going to get in a situation that you're not going to have the top players out there. And, you know, if they're not feeling safe, then your franchise is not doing that well as far as, you know, again, no offense to the players that are, you know, 125 or 150, you know, then they may not be the stars of the game, but, and I know they're great players and they can win any week, but they're not the ones that are really driving this tour.
I agree. It is baffling. And as I said, you know, if you're not protecting your assets, you better get used to watching the Korn Ferry Tour, because that's probably what's going to be out there, right? And, you know, as much as there are great names out there, we're about to get into one of our favorites that is just on a tear. You know, we want to see the best of the best, and let's just be safer. Let's be smarter. I don't understand it. They're not going to comment on it. I don't know why, but here we are. Speaking of the Korn Ferry Tour, though, Taylor Pendrith, this guy. Yeah. Is on a tear. He is so close. Back-to-back seconds or back-to-back second thirds. I forget what
it
is.
Yeah, T3 and then a second place. Yeah, T3 in Colorado and then second in San Antonio.
Unbelievable. Just awesome to see. Great guy. Hits bombs. Off to a tough start as of recording the podcast right now. We're on another one of these Wednesday to Saturdays for the Korn Ferry Tour, which, as I said, I'm all for, but let's get him on TV if we're going to do it. Let's highlight it. But we're really excited to see Pendrith give it another go. Michael Glick actually in the field with a familiar name on the bag this week for this podcast with our first guest and been on a few times, Ryan DeVoe. Everyone that's come on the podcast, we love everyone from the James Duffies to Sean McKenzie, to Gary Player, anyone in between. You know, we love them all, but Dez is our favorite. First guy there, he'll come on anytime, always has a story for us. So he let me know, you know, hey, I'm looping for Gligget this week. And I was like, that's awesome. Finally getting a shot on the Korn Ferry Tour. I believe this is his first start catting out there. So we're celebrating whatever. While we're celebrating, there's a old video going on our local television station of him playing in a junior tournament against Simon Ryers, another player from like 2004 or 2005, something like that, which is hilarious. He had no idea. So we're chatting about that, and I said, I noticed him and Glick are rooming together. So I said, hey, Glick's been on the show a couple times. You know, we chat every once in a while. And I said, ask Glick how many numbers he needed to go through before I would have gotten the call to come down. And I said, the over under is set at 25.5. So he said, okay, I'll get back to you. And he comes back about an hour later. He says, Glick says over, well over that number.
Oh man, so no respect.
It might have been triple digits before Glick may have carried his own bag before he gave me a call, but we're tracking him. Glick's even through round one, T51 as we record this podcast, but I'm sure as of tomorrow when they see it, both those Canadians will be running a little bit better with a fellow Canadian on the bag. But speaking of Canadians, we have four Canadians in the top 100 of the OW official World Golf Rankings. Wow, why was I going to go with the acronym?
I have no idea.
That's the first time ever. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it was a stat that Dr. Stuart Love on the PGA Tour had been talking about, who's a Canadian who works out on the tour, and said, you know, it was going to happen really, really soon. And, you know, not looking at the case of just looking at the rankings, but just seeing the players out there and knowing what was happening with them. And obviously these guys are all winners now, and Adam Hadwin, Corey Connors, Mackenzie Hughes, and Nick Taylor. So, it's pretty cool to see. And I mean, you know, the wins are obviously important. Continued success is important. Continued, you know, strong finishes. Obviously, because they're winners, they're getting into the bigger events. That obviously keeps them in that official World Golf Rankings. But I think it's just it really is an indication of where this game has been going in Canada for the last 15 years, both on the men's and women's side. And I think, you know, there's a number of factors that, that play into that, whether it's national team, private coaching, inspiration by other top players, junior programs. It's not one thing. It's a multiple things, but it's great to see. And I would not be surprised given how, you know, Nick Taylor at 100 right now, but, you know, he could jump up in there. We could have four players within the top 50 within the year.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Nick Taylor, the only reason he's 100 right now is just from taking all that time, extra time off than the rest of the guys. You know, Graham Dillette, I mean, he's still fighting some injuries, but, you know, he gets his back in place. Like, the guy's one of the best ball strikers on the PGA Tour when he's out there. Who knows? He could get back into the top 100 for sure. It is awesome to see. You got guys on the, as we talked about, on the Korn Ferry Tour that hopefully they can make that jump up. But yeah, it's really exciting. You know, and on the LPGA side, like, one of the faces of the game is Canadian and Brooke Henderson. So it is nice to see some more Canadian love. I just wish they would stop saying from, like, Toronto, Canada, like, you know, you know, we don't say from Houston, United States, which, but hey, I digress. I touched on the LPGA there, and I forgot to go over this earlier, but the LPGA still talking about having fans, even though the PGA Tour talked about having fans. Like, that makes no sense. I think it's pretty obvious what you're going to decide here.
Yeah, I think they should just go ahead and call it. Even you know, even discussing it and saying, you know, we've got a few weeks left and we'll see what happens. No, just make the call now. Get it over, get it done. I realize LPGA, it's probably more important than for them from a revenue standpoint versus the PGA Tour. They don't quite have the big TV contracts and whatever, but, you know, that shouldn't really matter at this point. It, you know, it is a safety issue more than anything. So, you know, just make the call and you know, just say, hey, there's not going to be any spectators. And you know what? The players will probably feel a lot safer as well.
That's what I was thinking. It's like, I know a lot of the women, we talked about this, we're not going to go down it too much further, but like, a lot of the women are feeling that way, right? Like, we want to be protected. There's obvious reasons, you know, the health reasons of women, and we don't know how COVID, you know, 19 could affect them, right? We're not going to go down that again, but sure. I think we need to recognize that. So I bet you next week when you're on the podcast here, talking, rambling on with who knows who, you're going to, there's going to be a touch point. Well, the LPGA canceled fans, and we'll go, well, oh yeah, Stefan and I said that last week, just like everyone else in the world. So not a big hot take. Well, it was a hot take and was the dumbest hot take of all time I ever saw ever.
I know where you're going here.
I could not get involved because I've been a 4 handicap at some point in my life. I think those days are long behind me, sadly. Some loser, I'm going to call him a loser, I think that's fair, on Twitter, got in an argument and said that a 4 handicap could win on the LPGA Tour. If they could. A 4 handicap could win on the LPGA Tour.
Got absolutely ratioed. And I mean, I guess one thing, I thought it was kind of funny that the fact that people even cared what somebody with 11 followers that made such a ridiculous statement thought. But on the other side of it, I think it was really important for, you know, people to come forward and really talk about the level of play on the LPGA Tour for other people that are maybe, you know, not as foolish to go out and say it publicly, but maybe think it and think that these players are not super talented and not playing at the level that they actually are.
Yeah, it was so dumb. And I kind of got into it in the fact that I will give the last lady on tour on the money list that year, I will put her up against any +2 handicap man out there right now that's actually a legit +2. And you guys, you can play the same yardage, I don't even care, and they're still winning. It's just such disrespect. It's such old school mentality to think that is actually true. Somebody did some sort of breakdown of what their handicaps would have been
last
year.
Yeah, Luke Stagner did a whole index thing, yeah.
Which was cool, but also we have to remember the conditions these ladies are playing under. It's not the same thing. Like, you know, Brooke Henderson being a +5 or whatever it is, you know, sure, she's a +5 in tournament play. Bet you if you had her handicap from her playing fun rounds with her friends, and she's, you know, focusing, like, all these folks that end up being +2 should be like a +8, right? It's way different. It's just so dumb. And it just gets me so frustrated to see like, why are we still having these conversations and as men in about women's sports, like as if we're so much better at them and all this, like it's nonsense, because like we're built differently. So there is going to be a thing where, yes, we can hit it farther and certain things we can do, but do not, like, if it's on an equal playing field, do not stop making these, this nonsense up. I can't even formulate words. I'm just so frustrated. And the problem is, like, we, you and I, correct me, we walk away from these conversations. We don't even have to partake in them.
Yeah.
Right. But
yeah,
there's women out there that they're in it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and having to deal with that all the time, I mean, it's just disrespectful, whether you're, you know, a professional athlete, male, female, whatever the case may be. But, you know, particularly for women within the game, women within professional sports, people not understanding the skill levels, and it carries over as well to other aspects of everything, with especially in sports, because it's so male dominated, but even the business side of it, that, you know, we see people that have to deal with crap that they should not have to deal with. And, you know, they have skills and, you know, again, they're just people, they're professionals. They have skills that are greater than a lot of other people, that maybe they're just jealous, or I don't know why they'll put them down, but it certainly shouldn't be something they have to deal with. And I think people just have to be a little bit more cognizant of what their comments are and educate themselves a little bit better about who these people are, what they do, whether they're professional athletes, somebody working in the industry, journalists, whatever the case may be.
Yeah. And we've been to, you know, LPGA events, you've looped in LPGA events. I was on the range last week with a former Symetra Tour winner right beside me who has not been hitting balls at all. And I, at that time, I think I was playing really well for that 2 week stretch prior to finding the driver. Yep. So again, why do I keep bringing it up? And I can tell you, we were hitting to the same club, to the same, you know, spot on the range, but one person was hitting it to 2 feet every single time, and another person was sculling them and hitting them thin and hitting them fat and hitting them over. So just stop. It's nonsense. But, you know, I don't think it's our spot to talk about. I think the best way we can talk about it is just bringing, you know, a woman that's in the industry that has to deal with this stuff, regardless of what they post on Twitter, to chat about what the experience is like in golf and how it isn't the most inclusive sport out there, you know, and how Twitter is toxic and it can be fun, but most times it ends up being this, you know, I'm going to talk to you versus hear you and talk with you. And, you know, we've seen Samantha Marks many a times on Twitter have to deal with this stuff. And Samantha Marks works with the Golf Channel. And I wanted to know what her thoughts are, because, you know, she's out there on Twitter. She has to deal with nonsense. She posts her swing and somebody talks about her looks. And we just want to know what her thoughts are on the industry of golf, being on Twitter as a woman and just having to deal with the nonsense, even though, you know, you can beat every single one of those guys tweeting at you. So without further ado, from the Golf Channel, Samantha Marks.
This episode of Tee Talk is brought to you by the all-new Tour Response from TaylorMade. Golfers have been yelling at their balls since, well, since always. So TaylorMade decided to make a ball that's designed to maximize performance and minimize shouting, with a soft, responsive urethane cover that's surprisingly affordable. So now, just like the pros, you can swear by a urethane ball, but without paying a tour quality price. The all-new Tour Response from TaylorMade. Swear by it, not at it. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the all-new Tour Response golf ball. This episode... All right, we want to welcome to the podcast a well-known figure on golf Twitter for everybody that follows her. I think she has a lot of fans, Samantha Marks, who is a burgeoning journalist, worked in the non-golf media for quite some time, and then now is working in the golf media, but also a graduate of the University of Arkansas and a golfer there. And you know what? We welcome you to the podcast. We're looking forward to having a conversation with you about a lot of different subjects in golf that I think are important these days, and we think you're the perfect person to talk about it.
Awesome. Well, thanks, guys. I'm glad to be here. Glad to help.
So just to kick off, why don't you tell people a little bit about your background? Because they might know you on Twitter, but they might not have checked out your profile and your bio, and they might not realize and understand, you know, there's a lot more to people than just their Twitter handle. They have to go back and see that, you know, people have a lot of credentials going into that and the experience that they have.
Sure. So I started out playing golf when I when I was six, competitively when I was six. So I started very young. My dad, you know, got me on the golf course, playing in bunkers, hanging on inside the golf cart, just anything to kind of get me out on the course with him. Started competing when I was six. Now, granted, that's, you know, a lot of US kids tournaments, 9-hole, even 5-hole tournaments, stuff like that. Got me introduced to the game pretty early, played all throughout high school here in Orlando, Florida. If you're familiar with golf Twitter, I was teammates with Hallie Ledbetter. We went to the same high school. So little tie back there. And then when I was going through recruiting, decided to choose University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, go Tar Heels. And then had a little bit of a change of heart 2 years in, transferred to the University of Arkansas and just had a blast. Loved my time there. Loved the coaches, the program, the girls, the school, the everything was just a better fit for me. Fast forward to graduation, I knew I didn't want to play pro. It was always my dream to play pro. Decided that I kind of came to a realization that I hate practicing. Like being on the range is quite literally like being in the depths of hell for me. Like I hate it so much. Like unless I'm on the range with my dad taking his money in some kind of contest, like I'm not that interested. So through college, that was interesting because, you know, like that's college golf, you practice. But we did a lot of on the course stuff, which I liked a lot better. So decided I didn't want to go pro. And I was like, well, what do I do? You know, I mean, I was majoring in broadcast journalism. I had always wanted to be on the Today Show, like just a really big, you know, bottle dream. But I was like, okay, well, then let's do this. If this is what we're going to do, then like, you got to commit to it. So 6 months out from my graduation, I went to my professor and I was like, do you think I can actually do this? I know it's like kind of last minute. And he was like, yeah, I think you could do it if you really, you know, work hard. So I did that for 6 months and then got a job right out of college at a Fox station in Colorado Springs, moved there the morning after graduation, started on air the next day, had everything kind of lined up that way. And then I decided that I didn't want to talk about dead people every day, all day. I was a hard news reporter, breaking news reporter on the scene, talking to the families after their kid has died, stuff like that, that I just wasn't prepared for as a 22-year-old. Something they don't teach you about in school. We should just say that part. So I decided I wanted to get back into golf. And this job opened up at the Golf Channel on their editorial desk. Now that's more so working with the website, a little bit of Twitter on one of their handles, writing articles, posting articles, dealing with the writers, you know, content management, stuff like that. So I was like, yeah, this will be a good, you know, good little segue back into golf. And it's been great so far. I've been there 19 months now. So I live back near home in Orlando and yeah, that's about it.
So what you're saying is you are Tiger Tracker.
I can neither confirm nor deny that I know the identity of Tiger Tracker.
Wow. That's...
I will tell you though, very few people in the building know who it is.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Probably a good way to do it.
You know, you said you didn't like to practice after, and that was part of the reason you didn't go pro. Didn't really stop you from playing in big events. You've qualified for the U.S. Women's Open in the past, and you're still playing really good golf now. Are you practicing at all now? Have you found a way to like it? Or is it just, hey, if I'm going out, I'm going out to play?
So nowadays, it's kind of more so going out to play. You know, I'll get there 10 minutes before my tee time, hit a few 9-irons, and we'll call it good. But I did go out to the range the other day. I go out to the range more often now because I want to produce the most fire Twitter content on the internet. So that is better than just beating balls. I was never somebody who could just sit there and hit, like my dad could sit there for hours and just hit balls over and over. And I'm just like, I can't, it's so boring. No playlist, no audiobook will ever get me to enjoy it. So nowadays, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I love to practice, but I go out when, you know, my parents are going or something like that. So
are you playing in any tournaments nowadays? Do you have any itch to get the competitive side going in amateur events?
I played in the parent-child amateur with my mom last year, which we won, by the way. So
congratulations.
Still got it a little bit. But yeah, it was – or no, it was the women's four ball. It wasn't a parent-child.
Are you still considered a child?
I technically am. And we play in the country club one. We'll be coming up in the fall. So, but yeah, I still – I don't know. I love competing. I've always loved competing, but I see some girls that I know that play on tour and I don't think I could base my performance on like whether I'm going to eat that week or not. Like that's too much pressure for me. I put enough pressure on myself as it is. Like I don't think that I could do that and still be like a happy individual. And for me, happiness is like the most important thing in my life. So I think that's ultimately what it came down to when I graduated.
Do you think for a lot of those golfers that, you know, they think of themselves as that golfer and they put their self-worth based on their golf? Is that part of the issue for you, is that you look at that and say, I don't want to be doing that. That's I don't want to be judging myself based on just my golf.
That's exactly right. I think that it's very hard to differentiate that for high performing golfers on the biggest stage. It's you are living and dying by every shot. It's hard not to. I mean, when your paychecks come and you're trying to pay rent and you're trying to feed yourself after an event, like you're traveling all over the place and spending a ton of money to, especially for women, not really make a lot back. So I think that that's just something that I wasn't willing to put myself through. Knowing that I am a lot more than a golfer. And I think that that gets lost a lot in golf, in every sport, but in golf, you are your own team. It's not like, you know, LeBron playing for the Lakers where he's just a part of the team. It's like the Lakers as a whole, like you are your own team. And that gets lost, I think, a lot in the fact that people think that golf is your whole life. And I think that's across all sports, but that's what I've seen.
And you kind of brushed over it a little bit, but in the men's game, there's a lot of mini tours out there that, you know, you can make money if you play well. You can actually, you know, put food on your table and live, and you know, it's not gonna be great, but you can. In the women's game, you can be on the LPGA tour and be struggling to even get by. Did that have any part in your decision making, or have you seen friends, you know, go through that kind of struggle of like, can I even fathom this even being possible?
Yeah, I have a couple friends who are going through that right now, kind of dealing with the when do I stop? When do I give up on that dream? And I think that that's also something I didn't want to put myself through. Watching friends do it is hard enough for me, knowing that they're struggling like that. I think in the women's game, there is still a lot of room for sponsors and stuff to be paid for through that avenue that I think people don't think about a lot, but it's still not going to be a sustainable salary unless you're winning every week. And obviously we all know that's hard to do. So it is hard, especially, you know, right now with Q school not being canceled for next year. I think a lot of girls are in limbo. And yeah, I feel really bad for them.
You know, I mentioned that about, you know, self-worth, but there's also a case of losing your love for the game too. And I know I've talked to lots of friends about that, people that have pursued the game, but, you know, do you think if you'd pursued it, went out and played, would you despise the game maybe a little bit? And maybe you're afraid of, you know, being put in that situation. It's something that you've loved since you were young. Then all of a sudden, you know, you make it a bad thing in your life.
I think I was not a very big fan of golf right after college. I moved out to Colorado and I played once in almost 2 years. My clubs literally had spider webs on them in my garage. Like it was very different than the way that 6 months before I thought I was going to be going to Q school and practicing every day and stuff like that. So it was a very strange turn of events for me, but ultimately, I needed the break. Like it had been since I was 6 years old before I had taken a full week off. And so I took that week off, felt really good, and then took like 52 more. So it was interesting. I wouldn't say that I ever hated it. I think I hated the idea of doing it. The college golf way was very taxing. 100% you have to do it if you're going to go pro. Like, you know what I mean? That it was never an option. I was never considering not doing it, but I think that it wears on you for sure.
I mean, there's, I'm sure, other things that wear on you in the golf industry still to this day. And following your Twitter account, some of the stuff that I see you go through wears on me. I'm going to leave this as vague as possible because I don't think I should be the one, or Scott should be the one to even, you know, come up with examples. So I'm going to just say this. What is it like to be a female golfer on Twitter?
I think it is equal parts so much fun and equal parts what the hell. Like, I think that's really the only way to describe it. I think I've made some amazing friends on golf Twitter that anytime I'm in their city, anytime they're in my city, we meet up, have drinks, go play nine, you know. But at the same time, there are people who sit behind a computer screen and say things that I could never dream of saying to somebody else. But you just have to remember, and I think that that's been the biggest lesson for me in the last year, is that that's their problem. Like, somebody projecting something on you about you is a reflection on them. It's not a reflection on me. It has nothing to do with me. That's an insatisfactory thing that's going on in their life. And once you can separate that from, once you can separate yourself from that, it makes it a lot easier to not take things so to heart. Do things hurt sometimes? Sure. Yeah, whatever. But like, it's not going to be something that's keeping me up at night. Most of the things I post about nowadays are just because I realize that a lot of people think it's really funny or like think it's entertaining. And some people, like what I posted the other day about the guy on my Snapchat saying that he was better at my job and like all this stuff than me. I think it was on Monday. That did not offend me or like hurt me in any way because I know how to stand up for myself. A lot of girls don't, and guys don't know how to deal with that. And so when he said that to me, I knew exactly what to say back to shut him the hell up. But you should have seen all the people in my DMs after that saying, I'm so sorry. Don't let it get you down. Like, don't, you know, keep doing what you're doing. And I'm like, oh, don't worry. Like, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. You know, like, it has no bad effect on me. I just think it's funny.
Well, does that have an effect on you of just wanting to go out anyway? Because, like, you know, you post swing videos, you'll get unnecessary comments on there. And then you'll post content. It's just like, if I were you, and maybe this is why you're doing it and I'm not built for it, like I can't read my mentions and I get two tweets a day and they're usually from Scott. but like, if I were you, I would be distraught being like, why do I even do this? Well, is there an industry I can go into where I'm not going to be judged, you know, for the clothes I wear when I'm hitting balls on the driving range? You know, like, I don't know how you fight through all the nonsense.
Yeah. I think for me and for most people who, and don't get me wrong, I wouldn't consider myself to have a large Twitter following, but it is much bigger than when I started last year. And I think that for people who have a following of people in the same industry as them, for me, obviously that's golf Twitter, it's worth it to get the videos or to get the messages that say, you know, my son saw your swing and he won't stop talking about how awesome it was. Like, here's a picture of him. He says hi. Or like, you know, I got a message this morning that was like, hey, I've been working on what you said about chipping and I've been chipping it so much better and your chipping video really helped me. And that stuff means so much more to me because I'm secure in who I am, that I don't let those people who say like, oh, you're fat or oh, you're ugly or whatever, like, okay, well, I don't think I am. So that's really all that matters. You know what I mean? Like I said, somebody who's sitting behind a screen and honestly are probably 60-year-old men, like, cool, like, go get a hobby that's maybe not golf because nobody will want to play with you.
Amazing. On that sort of vein, but a little bit differently, I mean, getting into the golf industry and the journalism side of it, I know I've been in it for a lot of years, but I've seen a lot of people come into it, male and female, struggle a little bit just because it's a bit of a closed shop. It's a small industry. What's been your experience as far as diving into it, just even in this past year, even though, you know, you're obviously working for a very prominent outlet, but what are the challenges and the victories that you've seen kind of in that early experience for you?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are very set in their ways. And I really didn't know, for example, the first time I posted something about a date that I had that went wrong, I had no idea what the response was going to be, but I thought it was funny. So I thought that everybody else should see it. And that's at least a couple people, at least my friends would think it was funny.
And that's when I started following you. I just thought it was hilarious, yeah.
I'm telling you what, those dating tweets get more impressions than any of my other tweets. Like I could tweet a selfie and it wouldn't touch the impressions on some guy saying something rude to me on Bumble. Like it's incredible. But to your point, I think people are very set in their ways. I think especially the older generation of golf Twitter, which granted, I think most men in their 50s, 60s, 70s log on there just to look. I don't think they're necessarily, you know, commenting, but the people around my age, y'all's age, are much more open to new content, open to new people. And I saw something that wasn't being talked about and I decided to talk about it. And I'm not trying to change the world in one tweet, but I think that it's something that people need to know is going on. Like just because I have a good golf swing and have a great job and have a nice life doesn't mean that people don't shit on me. So I think that it's been good for me. I've been able to break into a space where there were a lot of great girls already established. Paige, a very good friend of mine. Amanda Rose, a very good friend of mine. Looking up to them, talking to them, you know, how do I do this? What am I doing? It's been good for me. I've made a lot of friends, like I said. I haven't really had too bad of an experience so far. I don't know if that answers your question. Or I just like walked all the way around it.
No, but I think, you know, you mentioned Amanda Rose and you kind of mentioned your content. I think especially like what I've noticed in Amanda is we've always had these silly male reporters, these almost, you know, guys that everyone knows are just joking. If you think in Canada, the Jerry D's of the world, he did a sports reporter and it was literally him just asking joking questions, but you never saw females doing it, partially because they probably weren't allowed, right? Like, oh, women can't be funny. And now we see, you know, women breaking through and asking. I remember seeing an interview with Amanda and Paul Casey from a few years ago, and Paul just didn't even know how to handle the questions she was asking him just because they were just different than what she's dealt with and he's dealt with in the past. Do you think it's finally allowing for, you know, funny women like yourself to break through and start actually showing a personality rather than just being Barbara Walters of golf media?
Yeah, I think you nailed it on the head there. I think that women are held to a lot higher of standards to make things pretty and make pictures look perfect and post, you know, these beautiful Instagram photos with, you know, Photoshop and the perfect caption and the perfect filter. And I think Twitter is a perfect place to kind of break out of that. And that's what I found as well. I think that you can post a lot more candidly. You can reply to people, interact with people a lot differently. And yeah, I mean, it's the perfect space to crack a joke. If it doesn't hit, whatever, like it's not that big of a deal. But Twitter is definitely a different outlet than anything that I've dealt with before. You know, Facebook is all my mom and her friends, and Instagram is all my friends that I haven't seen in 10 years. And you just try to make this beautiful picture of your life, where Twitter's like, no, here it is. Like, this day sucks and it'll be fine. And everybody's really a lot more accepting than I thought they would be when I first started posting a little bit more candidly.
So for you now, I mean, you know, you're very short into your career so far, and I'm sure you've learned a lot already, but have you already begun to think of how you can, you know, contribute to the next generation behind you and set some examples, maybe be a role model, and, you know, provide some mentorship?
Yeah. I mean, I get messages a lot from parents who are, you know, show their daughter, their son, you know, my swing or something about, you know, what I've done for Golf Channel. And I think that that's a small way that I can start to get involved. I hope the next generation is as funny as me and Amanda and Paige, but I don't know if they will be. Like, we're pretty great. So I call this like our class, like this is the class, like we're in a certain, like the class of 2020, not really, but like we're all in the same kind of age group, the same kind of, if you look at Nikki B, Tisha, we're all kind of the same age. So I think it's going to be a little while before the next quote unquote like class comes up, if that makes sense. So I think that it's more so showing people, for me, is very important to show people that, you just post whatever you want. Like, it's not, it doesn't have to be the most perfect picture with the most perfect filter. I try to be as candid as I can be, especially on Twitter.
Well, we'll leave it with this. You know, you're talking about that next generation, and the only way you can have that next generation is, you know, making golf a more inclusive game and getting more, you know, everybody playing, not just old white men like Scott and I. So I'll ask you this. How can we make golf a more inclusive game for the next generation?
I think the most important thing you can do is invite your friends, invite everybody, not just the people you always hang out with. Put it on your Instagram that you're going out and playing and you're inviting people, or go play as a single at the nine hole and just meet people and, you know, try to make friends. I think that golf is a very inclusive game. As far as, I saw this tweet and I wish I had it pinned, but you start on the first tee and you make a friend, debate for 4 hours or whatever, and you end it and your friends, like, you made a friend, you know what I mean? Like, you, it's an experience. And I think that inviting people who aren't used to the game or might be afraid to go out to a golf course is an important, very small step that we can start to make.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, Sam, for joining us on the Tee Talk podcast. Make sure everyone follows you on Twitter. Where can they find you on Twitter and Instagram?
Twitter is Sam Marks GC, and Marks is M-A-R-K-S. And then Instagram is Samantha S. Marks. So look forward to seeing y'all there.
Perfect. Well, thank you for coming on. We look forward to chat with you in the future. And enjoy the golf season down there in Florida.
Of course, we'll do.
Thank you, Sam, for that interview. I think the biggest thing we learned is everyone can just be better to one another and stop believing you're going to beat professional golfers when you're a 4 handicap, a 3 handicap, 2 handicap, 1 scratch, +1, +2. Just stop believing it. It's not going to happen. You're silly. And, you know, we're sorry you have to deal with the stuff you do deal with, Sam, but we loved having you on. You're welcome back anytime. And good luck with your playing coming up. She can play. She played in U.S. Open at one point, or qualified for U.S. Open, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, fantastic player. Played at the University of Arkansas after she transferred from North Carolina, as she mentioned in the interview. And you know what? I think that's the thing people have to realize when they jump on Twitter. They don't know who's on the other end. So, you know, people coming out and making these comments to her based on her looks and her appearance and maybe a couple of posted swings, they have no idea what her experience is, whether that is a professional journalist or as a player as well. So people that are doing that, take it down a notch.
100%. Well, what else are we seeing on Twitter these days, Scott? We kind of went over everything else that's happened this week. We're back at Muirfield for the Memorial. Tiger's in the field. We don't need to talk about Tiger. We only mentioned Bryson's name once, so that's enough. what else are you seeing out there?
Yeah, I was having a good laugh the other day. Some people brought up the Cameo app. And if people are not familiar with Cameo at this point, basically it's an app where people can pay to have a celebrity. And I'll put air quotes up for that, because certainly there's some people on here that I have no idea who they are, and it's pretty questionable whether they're a celebrity or not. But you can get them to do a greeting, a short greeting, 30 seconds, 1 minute, for a price, for a friend, for an example. So you could pay X person, for an example, and say, you know, let's say a birthday greeting to grandpa because he was a fan of that sitcom in the 1970s. Well, they might be on there grinding away trying to make a couple of dollars. So what happened was someone said, hey, are there any golfers that are on Cameo? And I'm like, yeah, they are, because I know that a few had gotten on there. So I went digging into it a little bit more to find out who are the golfers that are on Cameo that are, you know, doing this for a few bucks. And it was kind of curious of who is actually on there.
Yeah. So who did you find, and who was the most expensive? That's what I want to know.
Well, the most expensive was John Daly at $750. Now, the cool part is when you go onto the website, there's actually examples of their work, which actually I shouldn't say cool. It's sad in some ways.
I need to hear this.
You definitely have to check some of them out. You know, some of the people are pretty good at it. They rip it off pretty good. They obviously read off, they read off a script. They get a note from somebody, and this is, you know, what you're supposed to say. Some of them are a little bit awkward. And some of them, yeah, are just like, you know, you just shake your head. They're whether they're undervalued because they're not charging enough. I mean, you mentioned Ryan DeVoe, you know, he caddied for Ryan O'Toole for a couple of years, who obviously is a solid player in the LPGA Tour. She's $25. She'll do a message for you. Now, granted, not everybody's going to know who Ryan O'Toole is, but to do it for $25, it seems a little undervalued. That's for sure.
Let's just hear a quick example of John Daly. If this doesn't come across well from, I'm coming from my phone, but I need to hear this. One sec.
Hey, Mike, John Daly here, buddy. First, you know, we need a few orders of business. Tell Van Riper to get his ass back. He owes me a C note. I love that. Also tell Lindsey Johnson to stop wearing women's underwear. A little above my pay grade there, buddy, but hey, you definitely gonna grip it and rip it, and have a happy 57th birthday, my brother. Take care. See ya.
$750 for that?
Yeah.
Wow, that was awful. Man, I mean, that's exactly what I expected. I don't even know half the words he said in there.
I don't think he does either.
That is awful. Now, the one that you had on your list here that surprised me the most and was Siwoo Kim.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is awesome.
$40.
It looks like he's just kind of wearing the same thing. He's done a pep talk one here, so I just want to hear this pep talk one real quick.
JP, how are you guys? I know you guys had a match for JP and Nick. I hope you guys enjoy, and I know Nick is a superior golfer, so I will be betting Nick wins, and hope you guys enjoy and good luck, and let me know who's gonna win. And thanks for doing this. Thank you, guys.
Does that get you fired up?
Wow!
It is. You know what?
I am really happy that you're playing golf. I hope you win. $40.
I get it that, you know, somebody's obviously made, I haven't looked into this website too much, but obviously somebody's made some good money off of this. But I don't know whether it's desperate or cool that people are on here, whether it's, you know, Lexi Thompson's $50, Luke Donald's $149, David Duval $200, Sergio Garcia $375. I mean, I'd be interested to know what they are, you know, what they will say. What are the limits of what they will say? Graham McDowell, $100. I'd pay $100. I mean, I'd pay $100 for that one. Sandra Gal, $50. Keegan Bradley, $199. Tom Lehman, $100. Jamie Lovemark, not many people are going to know who he is, $75. Jim Noose. From the. Yeah, exactly. $15, you know, plays the Corn Ferry Tour. And there's a whole bunch, as you would expect, a whole bunch of Instagram influencers that are on there that call themselves golfers that, again, from a price standpoint, who knows? Maybe there's an audience for them. Maybe somebody's a big fan for them. But it's pretty funny when you go through it and you see what this is all about. And I don't know how many of these they rip off. If you look at, you know, if you look at them doing it, or obviously some of them are, you know, the same clothes, and maybe they can do 10 in a row, like, you know, in 10 minutes and make some cash out of this. Maybe they're smarter than we are, but
maybe we got to get on here. I wonder how much, like, would someone pay $1 to get a message from me?
Yeah, but the funny part is, though, apparently they'll reject people. You have to apply to it. And I saw a tweet from Brenda Calcavecchia that she tried to get her husband, Mark, who's an Open champion, won the Open Championship in 1989. And apparently she got blown off over it.
But so, here we got Siwoo Kim. I mean, I get it. Siwoo, this is not his first language. It's not his first language, so he's probably being very scripted. But that was as monotone comes. So, I wouldn't pay a dollar for anybody. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. Rather a birthday message from you, Scotty. So I'll pay a dollar for that. You know what is free every single week, Scott? That's better. And you can just ask whatever you want and we'll just answer it.
What's that?
The mailbag. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with the mailbag. We'll hit the tip of the week and we'll wrap up this episode.
This episode of Tee Talk is brought to you by the all-new Tour Response from TaylorMade. Golfers have been yelling at their balls since, well, since always. So TaylorMade decided to make a ball that's designed to maximize performance and minimize shouting with a soft, responsive urethane cover that's surprisingly affordable. So now, just like the pros, you can swear by a urethane ball, but without paying a tour quality price. The all-new Tour Response from TaylorMade. Swear by it, not at it. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca to learn more about the all-new Tour Response golf ball. Free it is. We have the mailbag filled up pretty quickly this week, so let's get started here. First things first, do you think watching the PGA Tour without fans is better? No annoying mashed potatoes, etc.
I don't think it's not better. There's no way you can say it's better. There's certain things I like more. I like you can hear more. I feel like the commentary is getting better in the sense they're not talking as much. I thought the coolest thing about the last week is Ricky there with a couple guys, Kevin Streelman, standing there drinking a beer, watching the guys finish it up. That was cool. That's like what you're going to see at the Flagstaff Open next month. Yeah, right? It felt like just a couple buddies watching it to the end. That type of stuff is good, but you know, you want those cheers on 18. You want the oohs. Right? Like, yeah. You want all that. Like, can you, you know, we're going through these tournaments, and I think where we'll really notice the biggest difference and for most people is when we get to the majors, especially mm-hmm. the ones where, you know, like everyone knows when you're coming down the stretch of the Open, that kind of horseshoe, right? And it's just packed. And then same with Augusta on 18. That's when I think you'll really notice it. But at the end of the day, I'd rather golf without fans than no golf. It's still better with them.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, I think that's a great example when you talk about the majors. I mean, we talk about Augusta National. You're used to hearing, you know, the audio, you're hearing roars from other holes.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Yeah, you hear players on 15, but you know they're putting and they can hear something going on 16, and you know it's nearby, and you know that is part of the ambiance. Maybe it'll be okay, but maybe it'll just be a little bit more unusual, but certainly I don't think it's better. But like you said, we'd rather have it this way than nothing at all. All right. Next one. Do you like an island green design on a golf course?
Yeah, why not? Something cool. You know, our thoughts, give it something different. So, you know, you play the same style holes, every single hole where there isn't a full water. I'd rather that than a bunch of bunkers. Let's make it different. Like I like the shot where water's short and you really got to think. And so I haven't played many. I think I played like 3 island green holes in my life, but they're cool. Why not?
Yeah, I think, you know, as long as it's not on every single hole.
Yeah, that would be different.
That might be getting a little bit crazy, but I like the fact that, you know, golf is really about emotions as well and controlling your emotions. It's not just about physical shots. And I think having the visual of an island green is really intimidating for a lot of people, and it really can trigger them. So how they react to it and how they respond to it, even though it's the most penal thing possible. I mean, obviously it's wet or it's not. But I think, you know, I think they have a space in the game for sure. All right. Next one. This might be interesting for you as an equipment guy. I don't really think about it too much. I know some people are fairly picky about their equipment and the looks of them, but graphics down or up on golf shafts?
So I'll tell a quick story. Some guy, the general choice that, you know, if you ever get a club and how you're taught to build clubs is the graphics down on shafts. So I'll tell you this, on top of that, like, they're not designed any differently when you flip them around. They're the same whether the graphics are down or not, so don't worry about that. So I'll tell you a quick story. I was building up a club one time. Some guy bought like a $300 shaft and brought it into the store to build it up, and you know, built it up the normal way. And he comes in, he's freaking out. He went to the parking lot, comes back, and he's like, "You guys screwed it up. Why are the graphics on the bottom? Like, they're supposed to be on the top." And we had to know, like, they're not supposed to be. Do it again. I'm not going to pay for it. So we had to like take off the head. We had to reshaft it. So the graphics are on the top. And I did learn a valuable lesson that day to ask with it. I think a lot of people don't think about it. For me, I like not only the graphics down, I like the grip like, I don't want the logo on the grip up. Usually I prefer that down. It's just preference for me. I don't use them to align anything, so I just think it looks better for myself. But it doesn't matter at the end of the day. The performance doesn't change which way the graphics are. Many times, like with all the adjustable heads right now, you'll grab with some of my clubs and the graphic will be on the side and the grip might be up top and the grip might be on this, because when I went to grip it that day, I may have had it in like the plus or like a up like right setting. So I don't even know anymore. I'm just not that picky. So, but if you gave me a choice, it'd be down.
Yeah, I would say up for me, and I think that's just as a traditionalist, I think I grew up, you know, kind of looking at the label being up top there. We, you know, when I look at a shaft now, like a, let's say a True Temper Dynamic Gold, you know, the current ones, they obviously have the longer label that you can turn around. Back in the day, it was a circular one that went all the way around. So you're just used to kind of seeing that way. It doesn't really matter. I'm not even looking at it. So it doesn't really matter to me. And really, I've said it before, they're just tools. That's all they are. It's not a fashion show, despite what you know a lot of people think. So for me, doesn't matter up or down. All right, next one here. This one could be interesting. I mean, I'm interested because we haven't really talked about this a lot, but we're starting to see, you know, some of these come out. Obviously, they come out every year from various outlets. Some outlets are every second year. But do golf course rankings have merit? That's what someone's asking. That's a big question.
I mean,
we could probably do a whole show.
Yeah, I'm going to say no. We have stories that we've heard of, you know, hey, this could bump your rating up two spots this year. And it does happen. I think from a standpoint of, hey, I'm in this area, like, where's the best? You can learn that way. And then maybe you can meet somebody and they could say, oh, you can check this out. But I played courses, top 10 courses in Canada from lists, whoever did the list, and got there and was like, this was overpriced. It's nice. It wasn't that fun. And then I've played courses that aren't on that list that are in just as good shape. And I've had way more fun with those layouts. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. There's other ways, forums, wherever you want to do it, do some research. But, you know, hey, if you're just in the area and want a quick fix, then it's not the worst thing in the world. You're probably going to find a nice track out there.
Yeah, I think the whole point of them in most cases is just engaging people and having conversations. Whether they actually have validity or not is really, really hard to think that they do in a lot of cases, because when you think about it, you know, if you have 100 raters or 200 raters, it's a pretty small sampling of a panel. And if we're talking about the US and 30,000 courses, or Canada with 2,300 golf courses, how it's so subjective. It really is so subjective. And I think I get it from a golf course standpoint, you know, from a business standpoint, marketing is important to say you're rated, but you know, is it really that important to be the 82nd golf course in a country? I don't know if that does much for you to say that. For some people, I guess, yes, but I think when it comes down to it, as you said, maybe those lists are important for an area for somebody searching around and trying to find a place to play. And they want to, you know, kind of make sure that they're going to somewhere decent based on what everybody else says. But in the end, I think golf courses, their responsibility is just to be number one to their customer. And that's about it.
Yeah, I agree. At the end of the day, for me, it's am I going to have more fun? I would like the list top 100 most fun golf courses to play. That one might be something I'm interested in, but you kind of touch about how subjective it is. Good luck finding somebody that's doing these objectively. It's golf at the end of the day. And then it reminded me of a conversation I saw on Twitter the one time, because they were talking about, you know, on some PGA Tour event, like, oh, that's such a bad hole, or that's such a what a great hole. And someone like, what makes a good and bad hole? And no one could really give an answer. And the answer really is subjectivity, unless, you know, there can be just bad holes where it's like, why? Like, this made it for example, there's par fives out there where I think you've described one in particular that I just despise as a two shot to a par three, because no matter what, you got to get to this certain spot. Like, that would be a pretty bad par five in my opinion. But at the end of the day, maybe somebody else thinks that makes it great, and who doesn't really matter, who cares?
No, it's exactly. It's whatever you like, whatever you enjoy. All right, two more here. Do you guys have a preference on COVID putting cups, inserts, or lifts?
I don't really have a preference. I haven't played one with a lift yet. I've played like a couple holes, tracks. We'll just have it like random holes. So for me, it doesn't matter. I like I like the course I usually play. It has like a little piece of PVC piping at the bottom. That seems to work, but is it any better than the pool noodle? I don't know.
Yeah. I think those two pretty much serve the same purpose. For me, I think I've liked the lifts a little bit more just for the fact that the ball will go down to the bottom of the cup. It's not going to, you know, it's not going to sit up on the top quite as much if the piece of PVC or the pool noodle is up near the top. And I think actually for a lot of people, and I've noticed this in talking to, you know, some people that are maybe a little bit older and don't want to reach down as much, I think they're liking the lifts a little bit better because they can just use their putter and pull up on the little lever that's there and pop the ball out of the hole. And for some of them, that's even easier than reaching down. So I wouldn't be surprised actually when, you know, all these restrictions get removed that we see some golf courses maintain the lifts actually.
I think that's a great idea. I don't see why you wouldn't. You know, there's golf, sadly, there's a lot of old people that play it, and it's not the youngest game. You know,
no.
It's younger than bridge. I know that for sure. And maybe maybe cribbage. And what's
where'd you pull that one out?
What's the mini tennis? I don't even know what that game's called that you see everyone playing.
Pickleball.
Pickleball. I knew it started with a P. But it's younger than those. But I still think, yeah, like, you know, if you can help someone that's got a bad back or an older person, plop it up. Why not? I think it's a great idea. You're allowed to put the pin in. So let's just let's get those going. Why not?
Yeah,
I think I agree. It should be on every course at that point. It's a great take, Scott.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And it's only because I'm 50 years old. Yeah. You're probably pointing at me that way just because I'm older. Anyway, speaking of older, last question here. What pro from 50 plus years ago would you have liked to see play golf live?
Yeah, definitely Scott McLeod.
Shush.
You know, they talk about his swing back in the early 40s.
Nice.
Ben Hogan for me. I think it's the best golf swing that's ever lived. Just seemed like a down-to-earth guy, and I'm sure someone's going to tweet me the opposite of that because that's the world. But Ben Hogan for me, just watching that, you know, the fact that he came out after a serious car accident and still ended up winning like immediately, just his swing is timeless. So Ben Hogan for me, you know, close second. I guess I'm going with Sam Snead. And you can watch these, they're out there on YouTube. You can watch some stuff. Yep. We talked about the Wonderful World of Golf or Shell's Wonderful World.
Shell's Wonderful World of Golf.
You can watch a lot of that, but I think if it was, you know, you're there live, give me those two.
Yeah, Hogan would definitely be appealing. Snead would probably be my number one. I just love the fluidity of his swing. And yes, I did get to meet him, and I wasn't a youngster when I met him.
Well, how much did he beat you in the...
we did not. Hey, you know what? I will tell you this.
The 1932 Q school that you guys went to together.
I will tell you that he scolded me because I opened the door for him at the PGA show. It was probably about 1995. And I'm like, oh, I'll get the door for you, Mr. Snead. And he's like, what do you think? I can't get the door for myself or whatever. And I was like, whoa. And I think he was kind of just joking about it or whatever. And then of course, then I heard his, you know, his normal thing to, oh, I can still kick that door frame and whatever. I was like, okay, whatever.
Yes, Mr. Snead.
Yes, exactly. Or whatever. But I would like to see him, you know, play in his prime for sure. And then my other one, I think would be, on the women's side would be Mickey Wright, who had an amazing swing, who passed away, not long ago and, you know, was revered, for her golf swing. And so that would be the two for me. I mean, obviously there's a lot of great film, as you said, out there that we can go back and look at it, but live I think would be a different situation. I think you're right too. I mean, Ben Hogan, you know, it would be interesting to sort of contrast what we see or perceive from the films and the videos that we see now and to what it looks like live and what it would look like that way. So, but I think either way, it's pretty impressive. So.
Well, you watch a lot of these guys that are out there right now still, and the older generation that they're getting older. Outside of Tiger, who I'm sure we'd all love to go back and rewatch his, you know, early years on the PGA Tour, for you, who's one of the guys that is current that you wish you could go back and rewatch those live, like make it so it's new, it's new watching it again.
You know, while I don't always like his takes on social media all the time, Steve Elkington had an amazing golf swing, so he was always fun to watch. David Tom's another guy as well. Those guys are great. I mean, current ones, or I mean, how current are you talking about?
I think those are fair. For me, I would love to see when Phil came out again, live, watching that short game and the way he thought about it and just how. You know, when Tiger came out, look at the way what's his face got into him. Oh, you'll learn about
Curtis Strange.
Now imagine like what the takes were when Phil first came out. He's trying those huge flop shots and all these high risk shots, and they probably didn't love that. So that's one for sure. But for me, Freddie Couples, I wish I could go back. Just the same thing. Ernie Els, those two guys swings. I don't think they've changed at all, which is why the two of them can still play at such a I don't want to say such an old age.
Don't do it.
At their age, because it's just long and smooth. But that's a good question. I really like that question from whoever brought that up.
Yeah, Els was really good to watch. Saw Fred Couples a little bit. And you know what? The first time I actually saw Mickelson play live, I think, was the 1993 Canadian Open. He was playing Yonex then. And I went out and followed him for about six or seven holes. And he didn't have, I wouldn't say he had the most graceful full swing. It was this long swing. It didn't seem to have the same rhythm as some of the other players, but you're right, around the short game, around the greens, you had no idea what he was going to do, what he was capable of, and what he would attempt. I think, which was always the great part, because it was always a mystery of, you know, how's this guy going to approach this. Everybody else was maybe taking a standard shot and he was making it look spectacular. So.
Yeah. The one thing I wish I could see live is Ernie Els fighting Steve Marino on his airplane.
Yeah, I
love it. That's the thing I wish I could see live. If you haven't read that story, just Google Ernie Els, Steve Marino, and enjoy. And enjoy. You can thank me later. That's it for the mailbag, Scott.
It is. That's it for this week. We thank everybody for their questions. Please keep them coming in. Looking forward to reading your next questions.
All right. Well, we can't have an episode without the tip of the week. So you had a tip early, you know, for me.
I did.
We'll see if it works if I ever play golf again. But now we have to give a tip to everybody. So what's the tip of the week this week?
All right. Real simple one this week. One thing I noticed the other day, we had some rain come down, and I was watching some other players play. And one thing that we want to do when we're dealing with predictable ball flight and trying to get predictable ball flight is we want to reduce as many variables as possible. And when things get involved with moisture, that creates some issue, especially between the golf ball and the club head. And really what we want to do to make sure when we're taking practice swings, especially if there's a lot of moisture early in the morning, maybe it's rain, there's some dew out there, we want to make sure that we're drying that club face off all the time. Because if we're not, we're going to get in a situation that it reduces friction. We end up with golf balls that fly up higher, don't get as much spin off them, and we're going to get some really unusual responses to what we expect to be our normal shots, especially with the short game shots. We're really trying to control distance. So, you know, when you go to hit chips, you know, which have, you know, we're obviously trying to have as much control as possible. Last thing you want to do before you hit the ball, even if you've made your practice strokes already, is dry the face, whether it's on your leg, your sock, your pants, whatever the case may be. And if you get a situation as well where you get a drop for the golf ball, I see players all the time that, you know, maybe clean off the ball a little bit, make sure it's dry. You're going to get a greater reaction between the club face and interaction between the club face and the ball, a lot more consistency. You're not going to get as many what we'd call squirrely shots, something that's a little bit more predictable. So for everybody, pay attention to that. Make sure the club face is dry as much as possible.
So you're telling me that the grooves on the face of the club actually do something?
Yeah, they definitely do. They'll help take away that water for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, so you know what? Really, for a lot of people, they just don't pay attention to it. And I see really good players do this all the time. I see them get set up for a pitch shot where they're trying to hit this low, nice little shot that checks and has a lot of spin, and they end up with this shot that goes up really high, takes off with a high launch angle with low spin, lands on the green and rolls out farther than they want it to. And that's a lot of it has to do with how much friction there is on the face. And if you overreact to that because you've seen that happen, you're going to start making other errors in your game as well. So you know what? Reduce the variables and you'll make your game a lot more simpler and more consistent.
Clean your clubs, folks. That's what you need to do. Well, I think that's it for Scotty. I think it's time for a mini vacation for me. I won't be here next week. Who knows who will be hosting with you? You never know. Maybe it'll just be you. Maybe you'll bring a guest in, but I'm sure it'll be great. This is where I was going to bring out the Flexic Open, but it's sold out, so we don't have to. But it's still happening August 15th and 16th. So for everyone that signed up, thank you. We look forward to that weekend. It's going to be different. I think that's something you're going to find out. We're looking at the rules, how we're going to do everything. We're going to probably play to however Golf Canada and Golf Ontario is doing things. And I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be different, but it's still going to be the same experience you know and love and can expect from any Flagstick event. So we really appreciate everyone for signing up. That's it, though, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Samantha Marks for joining us from the Golf Channel. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Make sure you rate us. Give us some feedback. And make sure you get those questions in next week for the mailbag. Maybe I'll throw in a couple questions just to throw you for a loop on my burner accounts. Because I need that, right? Yeah, that's what I need. All right, Scott, I've lost it. I need to get out of here. I need to go find some sun, some lake, and maybe a beer or two. So have fun next week. Any final thoughts?
No, have a great vacation, bud, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, folks, everyone, we'll chat with you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy the golf. Enjoy Tiger being back at Memorial, and maybe we broke something a few weeks, months ago with Jack Nicklaus. Maybe we'll be talked about on the Golf Channel. Who knows? We'll talk about that in a few weeks. Everyone, thank you for listening. We'll chat soon. Some ocean in a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean. Have enough.